Hello, Spacers. I'm Christopher Schmidt, and I'm talking with Singapore-based writer, freelance web designer, and developer, Zhao Liu. He is most known for his down-to-earth articles, especially those on responsive typography, some notes about where I'll be, Responsive Web Design Summit, RWD Summit. It's a three-day virtual conference on web performance, responsive design and management, responsive images, SVG, and a whole lot more. You can ask questions live to speakers and your fellow developers, and you can refer back to the recordings as many times as you want, but you have to register. It's happening March 29th through the 31st. More information is at rwdsummit.com. Also, check out css.com. It's not just a CSS conference for web builders. It's also CSS, SAS, post-CSS, and much more. Recently announced featured speakers include Rachel Andrews, Chris Coyer, Trent Walton, Jonathan Snook, Estelle Weil, and Sarah Drasner. I believe we've had them all on the show, too, as well, so that's pretty cool. And you, dear listener, can be a speaker as well. We have a call for sessions going on right now. See more information at cssdevconf.com. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at Teleject, T-E-L-E-J-E-C-T, where I'll try to be witty, I guess. I don't know. But I will give you lots of typos if I don't make you laugh. As always, thank you for subscribing, liking, and telling others about Non-Breaking Space Show on iTunes. If you want to be super chill about it, don't break a sweat. You have the show sent to your email box by signing up at newsletter.nonbreakingspace.tv. As always, you can find show notes and links at nonbreakingspace.tv. Now on with the show. Now on with the show.
Now on with the show.
This is like my first podcast, and really honored to be here. So,
Well, thanks. Thanks so much. I mean, I go through a lot of responsive web design links, or not responsive, but like just web design links for our Environments for Humans Twitter account, and I just go look through them, and because we post a lot of them through the week, and I really enjoyed your responsive web design typography article. Which, you know, everyone was also looking to, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. And just really enjoyed the way you went about describing it and talking about it. And it was just, there's a lot of great other articles about responsive typography that are out there, or write typography as well. But it was always nice to see a new take on it, if you will, a new person writing about it, and a really good detail too about it. So, but it's pretty good. So we're just really honored to have you on here. We'll talk more about typography in a second, but one thing we always ask is how did you get into web design? Like, what brought you into the web? How did you first interact with the web? And then what made you think about like, hey, I can actually start writing articles about typography for the web?
Okay, yeah. Cool. I think this, I'm pretty new to the web actually. It's only been about 3 years since I last started to code. Mm-hmm. Like, I only did coding stuff about 3 years from now. So what came to mind when I first started was that I was in London at that time and joined a startup in the accelerator program. And at that time, when I was at home in the middle of the night, I was like, well, I can't help this guy do like the web stuff because I didn't know how to do the web stuff. I was a finance graduate.
Oh, wow.
And then,
okay.
Yeah. And I wanted to help my friend with like some of the app-related stuff. So I was also interested in the design part of things, been fiddling around with Photoshop once in a while. Mm-hmm. Not awesome at it, obviously. Then I was like, I couldn't do anything. And I have been feeling useless for about 6 years before that. So so there's always been this little breakdowns when I had like once in a while where I cried about being useless and stuff. Then this is one night after a conversation with my friend, right? I decided to, hey, let's stop being useless and then start picking up something useful. Yeah, so at that time, I started learning more about Photoshop and design, like, seriously.
So, oh, like, maybe, well, like, what, where'd you go first? Like, what resource or, like, what type
outside,
of...
I was at Tuts Plus for a long time. Like when I started, I was always at Tuts Plus. Then that's when I started learning about. I remember there was this art, this video. I forgot who was it from, but it was about creating a website, right? Creating it in Photoshop and then building it in HTML and CSS. So that's where I follow, because there's no point if I learn design, but I can't put it up anywhere, right? So that's my train of thought. So I followed that tutorial, went to Photoshop, design, followed whatever he designed, so I learned the techniques that he was teaching, then converted in the HTML and CSS, learned some hacks here and there, like the line height thing for the navigation bar, kind of things like that, the vertical centering at that time. So then from that point on, I think my next challenge was to code up something similar to a website. So what I did was I used Tuts Plus as my trial. So I was flying back to Singapore, and during the flight, I was like coding all along, trying to copy every single thing that Tuts Plus website had. That was the old Tuts Plus then. So it's not responsive, so it's a lot easier for me at that time. So coding, doing the whole thing, and by the end of the flight, I got that website up, and it's like, oh yes, I can do this. So that's okay. When I went on further after that.
Cool. So another long flight made you a web designer. Is that what?
Yeah, I guess so.
So after Tuts Plus, like what next? I was just interested, like what educational resources you used since then. Like what you used to, what resources do you like to go to now?
What resource? I mainly Google around nowadays. So when I Google, I just try to find articles that work. Usually, I land in CSS tricks. if I'm searching for CSS stuff, and yeah. Just mainly CSS tricks. Other than that, mostly it'll be just plain Googling. Sometimes Smashing Mac, sometimes SitePoint.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. But when it comes to CSS stuff, I mainly have all the things in my head already. So.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I can probably just code everything out without even having to Google.
Oh, that's good. That's good. At least one of us can do that. I still need Google. And I've actually written books on it, so I still use Google a lot. So, cool. Are you still a finance? Is finance your day job, or like, what's your day job? Or
I'm a freelancer.
You're a freelancer. You're a freelancer
now? Okay. Yeah, web freelancer.
Okay.
Been doing it for about 2 years. So oh, nice. after I started learning, 10 months later I started freelancing.
That's great. That's awesome. Yeah. Cool. All right. So what has been your, challenges in being a freelancer?
Challenges? Well, clients. Getting clients.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Nice. So I'm kind of like the freelancer who has an idealistic, who has like some sort of like idealistic client, that kind of thing. So it's kind of hard for me to get that kind of clients. But mostly, so far, I've worked with development agencies. That's pretty good for me so far. The kind of clients I want is, I want to design and develop for them. So the whole experience of their website. Well, but most clients, they don't really... Well, at least from my experience until now, I couldn't find clients that allow me to do that. Or maybe it's just because of me, right? So that's one part I need to work on anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Well... It's always an ongoing relationship with clients. So it's always good. Okay. So let's talk about topography and responsive topography, because that's what I really want to touch base with today. I guess one of the things that we can talk about is just kind of the basics a little bit. And because you have some new articles on your site. And what is the difference between EM and REM type sizes? Because EMs, we've been around forever. And pretty much, and so what's the difference between REMs and EMs?
Well, I think the main difference between REMs and EMs is that I tend to pronounce one of them as REM and M, so it makes it easier for me to say. So REM is, you can treat REM like a global variable when you're doing JavaScript, if you do, or any programming languages. So REM has always this fixed number that's inherited from the root size. That's why it's called REM, root EMs. So this number is from the HTML element. So what makes EM really useful is that when you have the size global things, like for example, if you work with type the vertical rhythm, it's really useful to size it in REMs as opposed to EMs. And EMs is just for local sizing, so it sizes according to the font size of its element itself. And that's where most people get confused with EM, because it's like one EM can be very different in one component as compared to another component, so that's really interesting. So I guess people can read more about that on my article. It's probably a better explanation than me trying to explain the air without like imagery to guide me along.
True.
But basically, I would use EM for local sizing or REM for global sizing. Mm-hmm. I think Richard Rutter has an article on this recently as well. So it's a similar thing. And what I learned from the article was this CH unit, which is interesting. So CH stands for character width. So instead of using EM, we can use CH instead to get this measure, the text measure. So the width of the text. Because one of the practices is that the text measure should be between 45 to 75 characters in width. So when you're using EM, you have to approximate it by, say, 0.5 EM is about one character. Mm-hmm. But if you're using CH is the character width of the letter 0. Mm-hmm. So you can just say 60 CH and it'll be 60 characters.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So do you know what the support is for CH?
I think it's, I did a quick research on it and I found it on CSS Tricks. So it's IE9 and above.
IE9 and above?
Yeah. Okay.
That's pretty sweet. Actually, pretty good.
Yep.
Cool. All right. CH. Cool. Yeah. So basically you just say CH unit for like 70 characters wide. Is that what you suggest?
I usually do between 50 to 60, I guess. Okay. 45 is a little bit too short, in my opinion. 75 is too long.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So around 60 is the sweet spot?
Yeah, about 60 is the sweet spot.
Okay. And you probably just put that on paragraphs and texts of columns. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I didn't know. That's great. Cool. I've find articles about it from 2012. I didn't even know about it. It's pretty sweet. Awesome. Okay, cool. And then, because like EMs, like because you nest EMs and you become into a series of just you go down a rabbit hole because then the EMs, especially on like listed items, mm-hmm. they get smaller and smaller. You nest listed items with EM units. So yeah, so REM units. Okay, cool. Cool. Awesome. Is there anything else about sizing of type that you suggest? Or,
well, there's one interesting thing that I read about recently. So it's sizing a type with viewport units. So mm-hmm. VW and VH, right? So because REM and EM are kind of like the things that have been around for a long, long time. Then when I wrote about the responsive typography article, a few people told me about, they were actually using viewport-based units, so VW for typography. And, that was interesting for me. So over the last weekend, I did some research to it, and that's going to be a new article coming up this Wednesday.
So you'd recommend using VW? I'm just trying to get like an insight into your article. For sizing or for what's...
VW sizing is pretty interesting. I haven't really tested it out on like production sites yet. So I think I'm still going to stick to REMs and EMs, but I'm going to run a few tests here and there in the next few sites that I create and see how that works out.
Okay. Go ahead.
The interesting with VW sizing is that, you can set two different widths and then you can get them to scale according to, like fit text. Mm-hmm. There used to be this fit text JS when you have like one big text and then it just fits across the screen no matter how big it is. So viewport typography works something like that in a way.
Oh yeah.
It might be interesting if we are going to use something like FitText, but I'm not sure how it actually plays out if you do work with body copy. And I kind of realized that it's much easier to, say, use VW for the HTML sizing and then inherit it with RAMs or EMs from then on. Yeah, then that way you can do vertical rhythms and modular scale and all that stuff as per normal without having to go into a cognitive overload with all the VW calculations, because that's quite complicated. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Have you used percentages at all?
I use percentages in my HTML font sizes.
Okay.
I have no idea why I use them. I could probably use N, but it just stuck with me.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure the proper, I can't tell you, I have to Google it myself. I can't tell you if people still use percentages for that. So
yeah.
For even for like width reports and stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Oh, then you have another article about vertical rhythm. And I really like your approach to that one, because it's very kind of the article about that one, because I feel like that was a very kind of like nice, easy path into learning about vertical rhythm. And actually explains why you need to do about that. But do you have like your mix-ins already for a mix-in already set up for using vertical rhythms and for all these, shortcuts in your work?
Oh yeah, I definitely do. This is like not easy stuff.
Yeah.
I used to use Compass Vertical Rhythm. I really loved it for a while until, it didn't get updated again. When I created the responsive typography article, I created a CESS library called Typee along with it. So when I created that article and that library, the main use of it was to allow people to create the font size and line height properties across multiple breakpoints, across multiple typographic elements, easily with CESS maps. So you can just have a few CESS maps if you're familiar with CESS, and then just include Typee and everything will be set up for you. So like all the media queries, all the breakpoints at the correct breakpoints, and you can create a breakpoints map to store all that breakpoints. So it's easy for you to reuse them. It's like a config file rather than coding from that point, but that's the general idea. Then after I've written about vertical rhythm, I kind of realized that, hey, vertical rhythm is important. And well, instead of having to calculate like 1.5 EM times 2, 1.5 EM times 3, or 1.33 EM times 2, which is kind of like a weird number sometimes. So I had this, so I added this VR function inside Typee. So how the VR function works is that it works almost exactly like Compass Vertical Rhythms, the rhythm function. So what you do is that you say margin colon VR1, then it'll be a vertical rhythm of 1. And it automatically takes the base Typee map. So this in Typee, you create a base map that says, hey, my HTML font size is supposed to be a certain font size, a certain line height. And then you can use that line height automatically in that calculations. Then I think there's one interesting thing about vertical rhythm that I mentioned, that we can't really use it. We can't really change the fonts, like the line heights, as we resize at different breakpoints right now. Because, one of the practices is that you have to change the line height, right? And you have to change font size. When you change font size, you probably have to change the line height as well. So the trouble with that is that once you change your line height, then your whole vertical rhythm goes crazy because there's no way to do it right now. And I actually discovered that you can use CSS variables to counter that.
Oh, yeah?
Nice. Yeah. So what you do is that you can do a root inside the root, create a CSS variable, create a media query, and change the line height in that root itself, then use that variable somewhere else. But you have to wait for support to catch up. Right now, I think it's in Firefox, and the next version of Chrome 49 will start supporting CSS variables. Firefox supports CSS variables, nothing else.
Okay.
So it'll be a while before that comes up.
Okay. Okay, cool. Yeah. All right. That sounds like a pretty cool trick. Okay, cool. So it's called Typee, which is T-Y-P-I. Yeah.
Yeah.
Looks pretty nice. Awesome. I've been looking for something like this. Yeah, vertical rhythm is very important. And so it's really hard, because because it does feel like it's almost like building on quicksand sometimes with vertical rhythms, because every time you try to get right, and I know there's like lots of online calculators that to help you out, but when you keep on changing, you know, your typefaces and everything like that, it just doesn't seem to stick. So I'd be interested to see. Well, it'd also be interesting to see when browsers have variables natively and how that's going to just change everything going forward too.
I think with vertical rhythms, one of the main difficulties people have is when they have two different typefaces. So that becomes a challenge, because it's like I have two different typefaces, but how do I match them together? So that is one thing. That is one question I got a lot recently. Like, because in my website, I said that I'm going to do a responsive typography course. And so I asked, what's the biggest challenge with responsive typography? Some people were saying that was their biggest challenge. Some people were saying, how do I resize? How do I choose the correct font size, the line height? Or some people were saying, how do I make sure the headers look nice, even on mobile and on desktop? So those are, some of them fall into vertical rhythm, some of them don't. And even if you use the same font, even if you use the same typeface for the article, sometimes you realize that when you combine modular scale and vertical rhythm at the same time, you kind of have a headline that has too large a leading or too small a leading, and it kind of looks weird. So I think one of the practices I use nowadays is to change my leading into a line height, into a uniqueness line height property, and then I let the vertical rhythm be destructed. I mean, like, when I went into the vertical rhythm article, the whole point of vertical rhythms is repetition. So as if you repeat it many, 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 many times, it's going to be familiar, right? So that's the whole point of vertical rhythms. And if there's going to be slight disruptions here and there with the headings once in a while, well, I don't think you'll have like 37 headings in an article, for example, maybe 4 or 5. And that small little disruptions, as long as they're consistent with each other, is pretty fine. Like in my website now, I don't really care about perfect vertical rhythm, because that's probably not going to be the way to do it. But once we learn about how, hey, vertical rhythm is actually repetition, you can apply repetition instead of applying vertical rhythm. So that's where I'm coming from when I write into that article. But maybe I didn't go too far in, so people are asking like, how to combine that? Well, maybe that's the next article or something.
Okay. Okay, I think I'll do there. Cool. And then it's, you know, with typography and the web, it's kind of hard just because of the nature of everything being so fluid, and then you put on top of that. So like, you just never know how things are gonna stick around, you know, just it's so fluid. So, and with, you know, you mentioned fit text, you know, the plugin with that, you know, it helps a little bit, but it doesn't solve. But there's, you know, there's so many other things to solve with typography. And so you mentioned you had a quiz or like a call for answers on your website about what are the biggest problems that people have with typography. Mm-hmm. And so it was like, I just want to go over that just a little bit, just so, and we can talk about matching two different typefaces. Mm-hmm. Was one, line height on different devices. Is that was one, right?
Yep.
And then, or the other ones? Okay. Kind of other issues that people said?
Mainly these three things, I would say. Like, people are talking about choosing fonts, like typefaces, but that's not under the realm of responsive typography.
That's always a big thing, like choosing two different typefaces, because it's always kind of like in the eye of the beholder type of thing. Like, it's also almost like a subjective thing to pick the right typefaces that work together, and so it's kind of hard to.
I think number three was font sizes of the header elements. I have no idea why, but specifically the header elements across mobile and desktop devices.
Gotcha. Okay, cross. And just basically just trying to pick the right sizes for those, right? So
yeah,
I think like those seem like more like design solutions. I mean, you come up with general, I guess, guidelines for those.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like what frameworks like Bootstrap are about, and like trying to solve those problems for a lot of people. They don't have to deal with the solutions for that. So.
Well, it's kind of interesting because if you talk about typography, right, there's like two different groups of people that fall into the thing about responsive typography. Well, yeah. One would be designers, obviously. So like, or developers who are trying to learn design. So trying to make the site look good. So they will have that kind of like designy questions related stuff. The other group would be developers. So like, how do I make sure I create this as easily as possible?
Right.
So
I appreciate that you have like design developers who want to learn about design, and then there's a group of people who are developers who I think diplomatically want to just get it done easily. Not that they would be actively against design, but this it's a very diplomatic way of saying they just want to get done as soon as possible.
Yeah.
And sometimes it feels like developers, you know, I mean, like, because we always see that. I don't want to rehash the designer developer debate, but it's always we as conference organizers always run into, and we try to like, you know, we try to merge the gap, but we always see a wall between designers and developers. I think it's a lot less now just because of designers need to code more. Mm-hmm. Then vice versa. So,
okay, that's kind of... Well, it's also because developers are more like accepting of design nowadays. Like, I think generally the education thing that's been going on around designers should learn the code, developers should learn the design, that kind of thing has been going around well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah,
that's a good site.
Yeah, I think, I mean, design's kind of blown up. If you're not thinking about design now, I think that's it's bad if you're not thinking about design right now. So, cool.
Yes.
So what other challenges are you interested in besides the topography, or there's other topography issues that we should handle you or talk about?
Other topography issues. I think those are the main typography issues right now. Okay. The others, I don't really see any other things.
Okay.
But yeah, people always have a problem with like developing, right? So CSS architecture regarding this kind of type elements.
Mm-hmm.
So not only type elements, but basically architecture in general. It's like, how do you write components that are reusable and modular and things like that. I think Harry Roberts is a good guy to follow on that, because he has really great thoughts and articles that actually change how I code stuff. So one of his articles was to use namespaces when you write BEM styles. CSS classes. So it's like BEM is like just BEM, but when you have a big web app or kind of things like that, you generally have things that are reusable, some things shouldn't be touched, and well, some are just styles that are utility classes, some are just like teaming classes and stuff like that. So Harry actually recommended that you split them into various groups, so like objects, components, the state classes, so like as has shown, is shown, that kind of thing. Team classes, layout classes, and stuff like that. So I followed that convention, but I tweaked it slightly because, well, I don't like to write so many classes. So my components, what Harry recommended was that component can have a namespace of like C. So C dash your component name. What I did basically was to capitalize my component names. So it kind of looks like JavaScript classes. So that's like a good way to fold things together.
Okay. Well, it's always good to have your own personal style of the things too. So add your own personal flair. So are you, it sounds like you know a lot about JavaScript. Are you a JavaScript person first, do you think, or more CSS? Or?
I began as a CSS person. So okay. I'm still more towards the design and development side of CSS HTML, okay. But along the way, I've picked up JavaScript as well.
Okay.
So like, basically, JavaScript isn't a problem for me. The next step for me was more like doing React and stuff.
Okay.
So picking up React recently, building a backend on my own to host my books and courses, so it's easier for people to read and things like that. So that's kind of interesting.
Okay. So what tips do you have for people who are designers just trying to get into more developer and to learn JavaScript and React?
Oh, that's a really interesting question, because there's like two parts of that question. Like, if beginners CSS are going to go into designers are going to learn development, they probably should focus more on the HTML CSS aspect as opposed to learning about JavaScript straight away. Because JavaScript are like state enhancers and stuff, so you can start interacting with the site. But when you're starting with going to develop the designs that you have created, probably it's best to reduce the complexity a little bit more. So you create a static HTML page for a start. Then the challenge there is to learn the practices involved in creating a good static HTML page without any JavaScript. So that was how I started initially for a long time. I only created static pages, but I think I created two or three, until you get to a point where you can replicate that static page across every device. So when I started, it was slightly easier because I didn't have to care about responsive design at the time. But I quickly got into responsive design soon after. So then, if you're going to talk about responsive design, the main things to understand will be media queries, like when to use min-width, when to use max-width, and things like that. A lot of people I see on the web still use max-width queries, probably because it's how Bootstrap and the others used it in the past. But I generally recommend against doing so. I have an article on writing mobile-first CSS. I think I wrote about a year ago. It's still pretty popular. So generally, you want to write min-width queries, so you go mobile-first. So that's how the whole thing goes. And sometimes you want some max-width queries, so you don't encroach on other styles if you have a very specific case that is only between a certain media query. So the media query thing is one thing that people need to get up with. Then I think the next thing to do will be layout. Layouts for me, I toggle between Suzy and Flexbox nowadays. And I know Rachel Andrews has this course on CSS layouts. So be interested. It would be interesting to check out if you're totally new with CSS layouts as well. Because I think Rachel goes into the very basics, like talking about position, like how does position absolute and relative or fixed affect your things like that. And CSS, there's a lot of weird languages like quirks, so you kind of have to go through it slowly and understand every single thing along the way. Then I think once you get the hang of like doing your responsive static HTML pages, then you can start moving on to JavaScript. Because from what I see is that designers have an eye for design. So when you talk about design, right, then you probably have all this responsive typography and all this, what's that called? The EMs and RAMs and how do you create it easily so you can do it across all devices. So that's in itself a very technical knowledge that you can get into. And once you get through that, maybe you start JavaScript or something. But of course, along the way, if you say, this is good enough for now, I want to learn JavaScript, that's fine as well. So when I learned JavaScript, I started with one of the books that people talk about. I can't remember what the name is, but I remember an article on JavaScript is sexy that says, this is how you learn JavaScript. And then basically I followed the whole article all the way through the end. So I think there was a Douglas Crockford book that you're supposed to read, and that was for like ECMAScript 3. I'm not sure how people would start with ECMAScript 5 right now. If you're talking about basic stuff, like how do you add classes, remove classes, and things like that, well, I still can suggest jQuery, but people are frowning against jQuery nowadays. So check out how to use... I think on a design perspective, you want to add class and remove class, first of all. Then you probably want to learn how to add event listeners on scroll. So those are the two things you probably need. And then maybe, those are the two things you need for designers. And if you go further into the whole spectrum, then you probably want to start, like, if you want to start learning React, right? a very good start would be to read, to look at the React videos. I think it was on Egghead. And right now, the whole React community is about Redux. And there's a good article on Redux and Egghead as well. Westwalls has this React for Beginners course that you could take a look at if you want, if you want to work with ECMAScript 5 or And but nowadays people work with ES6 more than ES5. So I think Westwalls also talk about how to transition from ES5 to ES6 nearer to the end of his course. But I'm not too sure because I bought the course, but I didn't really go through it that way. I kind of and then started piecing everything together myself. So, well, that probably brings me to the next point that I really want to emphasize. Like, a lot of people, when they go out and learn things on the web nowadays, it's kind of like, what's the fastest way I can get something? What's the easiest way I can get something? But generally, the best way to learn something is really to boil down into the very practical things or the nitty-gritty and understand what it's actually saying. So like the example of the vertical rhythm article I had was like, hey, what is vertical rhythm really saying? And then when you know what vertical rhythm is saying, you can like, okay, this is so important that I have to follow it strictly to the book. Well, probably not, because the principle is repetition. It's not about any other thing. Well, then again, when you look at CSS and JavaScript, you kind of need to start noticing certain things and certain patterns along the way, and that part of it is you have to spend time on it. You can't say, "Hey, I'm just going to use Bootstrap and then Bootstrap will solve everything for me," because along the way, I kind of have people emailing me and saying, "Maybe the best way to learn CSS is not to use a framework," and that's when they start. Okay, I can take control again over my style sheets as opposed to I need someone else to help fix it for me. So that's probably where you need to start. Like, have the courage to get your hands dirty and go nitty gritty. So that's probably the most important thing I would say.
Well, that's a lot of great advice. That's awesome. That's great. Yeah, that article I think is what's called How to Learn JavaScript Properly.
Yeah.
Yes, cool. It says javascriptissexy.com.
Yeah.
I don't learn JavaScript properly. So yeah, so definitely it's a good starting point and to go forward. So that's a lot of great resources there. So thank you very much for that. So, but yeah, I think JavaScript is always very important, you know, for people coming forward in our industry. So just want to see what your thoughts were on that. So cool. What other interests do you have, or what's any other passions about the web or anything that's keeping your interests?
Well, a ton of things, I guess. I'm always like trying to learn new things.
Yeah.
So always failing at learning the new things. Like just for example, for React, I've been trying to learn it for about like a couple of months now. Just picking up and throwing it down again. It's like, okay, this is too hard. And then just picking up again at a later time. So some of the things that I've been picking up are like React, building some backend stuff. So generally, I want to move towards a full stack kind of thing because I want to make stuff. So not only the websites, but like maybe an app or full experience or something like that. So React, Redux, Express, some Mongo stuff. And then if we talk about the web-related things, I want to work on my design skills. Well, going deeper into the different practices and then finding out how to actually use them. I kind of want to learn illustrations because I don't know how to draw. I can't illustrate, but I'm like, hey, I'm designing. So I guess this is one thing that people who can't draw can take away with it. It's okay. You just have to follow the practices and then you'll be fine with the design kind of thing. Like if you look at my website right now, there's no drawings because I can't draw for shit. So... Well, that's one thing, I guess. Drawing. Yeah, I also want to really go into the performance optimization kind of stuff. So, like, one thing that is on my mind recently is about HTTP2. Okay. I've already created a Gulp workflow that does concatenation, minification, and all that other stuff for HTTP1. And I also actively teach about Gulp on those kind of things. That's my second book. But right now, when HTTP2 comes into the play, right, like things get different. There are a lot of articles touting, say, HTTP2 is awesome, you should switch to HTTP2. And my question is, how do you switch to HTTP2 in the first place? Like, how do you create the stuff? How do you make sure the browsers get the correct information that you need and things like that? So, well, because I don't have a very technical background, this kind of things always come a lot slower to me. So, going to have to spend more time on it. Responsive images, that's one big nut to crack. Recently, there's this thing I've read about called Cloudinary. They can help you create images of different sizes that can use. That you can use it for responsive images. So that's kind of interesting to see how you can use it in an actual workflow. Oh, because I'm like kind of like the designer and the developer guy, I kind of want to make things easy to work with. So I always try to create workflows and make it automated. So I'll see how that works as well. And speaking of responsive images, SRC set is quite important. And if you have to work with older browsers, you can use Picture Fill by Filament Group. Working with SVGs is something I want to go further into. Yeah, I guess that's about it for now.
Well, that's enough, really, if you think about
it. Yeah, that's a lot. I still want to learn more about typography and how to, like, stuff, like, too many things to learn.
Yeah, I think you just pretty much give like a whole like laundry list of the syllabus for a web design course right there. I think. But you definitely keep on publishing those great articles. I think everyone will benefit from what you're learning, what you've learned so far. Yeah, cool. So where can people find you on the internet?
Well, my blog is at zellwk.com. That is zellwk.com. And if you want to find me on Twitter, it's ZLWK. So my email, my website, and my Twitter account are exactly the same.
Ah, you're one of those people. Okay, sweet.
Yeah.
That's pretty nice. My name is Christopher, which means there's so many Christophers out there, they don't, I can't get anything original. So,
yeah. Cool. It's pretty cool that that's probably a fun fact that, some people will ask. Sometimes, like, when I say my name is Zell, they're like, oh, cool name. Where do you get it from? Some people will say, Dell? Dell? No, like, Dell computer. No, not Dell.
No. There was a Georgia politician that was had named Zell, so I'm okay with the name Zell, so it's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm not sure if he's from Singapore or not.
No, it's actually from a game.
From a game?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, Zelda? Or is it?
No, Zelda is what people try to associate with, but Zelda is at ELDA, right?
Yeah.
So it's Final Fantasy VIII. That's a character called Zelda.
Okay. Final Fantasy VIII. I will research that. I should have asked you probably before we start talking, but cool. Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's good. So let's see, what type of things do you usually tweet?
Yeah. I retweet the things that I see on Twitter once in a while if I am active on Twitter, but I generally don't look at my Twitter feed too much.
Okay.
Well, I guess I'm spending most of my time trying to learn new stuff or doing things, so I don't spend a lot of time on social media. But if you tweet me or if you email me, I will make it a point to reply.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. I'm not trying to call you out or anything. I'm just saying.
Nah, that's fine. I'm just being honest about the kind of way that I work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I think you're the first one from Singapore to be here. So, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Chris, for having me on the show. It's an honor to be here. Like I said, it's my first podcast and it's really exciting.
Sweet.
Awesome.
I foresee many podcasts in your future, sir. So.
All right. Thank you.
coming to you live from around the world. Not a record space show. We named this show because we want to make it hard for you to find. We disguise it as a HTML entity. Only the resourceful, the trusting, the resourceful. Did I say trusting already? I think it's and resourceful, yeah. And the resourceful know about this show. Do not tell anyone, especially when you review it on iTunes. Just keep on looking the other direction. Just keep on looking. I see you. See you pulling up the browser. Don't you dare. Just keep it going. Think you're so cool with your browsers, your Photoshop, and your Sketch app. Man, it's cool. So cool. All right, I'm out.